Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, it's Mark Graben. Welcome to episode 502 of the podcast. It's April 10th, 2024. My guest today is Dwayne Allen. He is a manufacturing executive. He's been a P&L leader. He's a speaker and a whole lot more. You'll learn more about him real soon. Today, we have a great conversation about lean and teamwork in leadership. We get his perspectives on leading lean from a general manager level, P&L leader, profit and loss, business leader. Really good opportunity here today. We talk about that and more. So if you'd like to learn more about Dwayne and contacting him, look for links in the show notes or go to leanblog.org/502. Hi, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Mark Graben. We are joined today. Our guest is Dwayne Allen. He is an executive, a speaker. He's a workshop facilitator. Looking at his career, and we're going to hear his story, he's a results-driven executive with over 20 years of experience. He's really known for leveraging his solid engineering and operations background to help propel growth for Fortune 500 companies. So he really excels in crafting and executing strategic plans to help desired outcomes be delivered. He's got a proven track record in fostering relationships and managing cross-functional teams. He's been a trusted advisor to C-suite executives for strategic decision-making, and he's been a general manager and P&L leader. So we have a unique opportunity to hear his perspectives from those roles. Dwayne also is dedicated to empowering more than 1,000 Black leaders to become influential corporate executives through STEM education, fostering diversity, equity, and innovation. So, Dwayne, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it. It's going to be fun.
It will be. There's a lot to talk about here. And, absolutely. You know, as I tend to do, as you know, I like to ask people about their lean origin story. Let's hear your story.
that's a great, great question. I am a classical industrial engineer. I decided to stop playing football and be a full-time engineering student at Tennessee Tech University in Cookeville. I'm a classical engineer, and what we learn the first thing, we learn about the thermoleagues, right? We learn about the classical engineering philosophy, industrial engineering, and then you learn about value streams and time motion studies and factory planning and all that stuff, right? And knowing those times in school in the mid 90s, it was more of a lot of these, continuous improvement philosophies were being thrust upon in industry, right? Particularly, you know, it's always been prevalent in the auto industry, which a lot of stuff we worked on. And it was very influential in our institution, right? I don't know if you remember the Saturn factory. Remember Saturn?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Was that nearby?
Yeah, that Saturn factory was down in Middle Tennessee, and we did a lot of work with a lot of the car manufacturer and that Saturn factory. And actually, that one of the commercials talked about that assembly line that was set up, which basically was a lean process flow line because they could crank out so many Saturns so many times. Particularly in that time frame, that was created at our institution, and I was a part of participating in that. And so, even though I didn't know necessarily that what you know lean was, right, exactly defined it, it was just embedded in me. And I dare say that's my origin story. I dare say I was the engineer. I was a unique engineer. Number one, I was trying to be an athlete, right, and then also I could actually talk to people.
I've gotten better at that.
I kind of like people, right? And so, and I was good, and I was always the one that they would put in front to go do the speaking, right? Yeah. And on the projects we did, I was always the one in front, and not necessarily the best student academically. I went through some of my struggles, but definitely I had a skill set, a superpower that came out, and so that's my story, and I'm gonna stick with it, right? From the origin of that and my career. Those skill sets follow me throughout my career, and I'm using them still today. So,
When you talk about the Saturn plant, Yeah. You know, I started my career at General Motors in Michigan, Detroit suburb, 1995.
Right.
And we knew of Saturn. It was talked about internally as a different kind of company. Like those were the ads. I think
that's what ads, right? Yeah.
It was a different union and contract. It was this fresh start, similar to NUMMI in California. It was more of a fresh start than NUMMI was in California. But GM was, I met some of the people who had been involved in the union side and the management side with Saturn, and they would come through, and it was such a struggle to try to spread any of that with GM. It wasn't just about the union contract being different, old attitudes that were just
hard. And you got to think about it, just that whole, and during those times, we're about the same age range. Generationally, there were ways you did things, right? And you had it, and back then, you know, it was, you know, the GM way, the IBM way, you know, everybody had a way, right? And that way, their philosophy, those cultures just stuck. And when you had these new up and comers who were based in continuous improvement, high quality, leaning out, offering low cost products, you know, Toyota was, you know, really destroying everybody during that time too, right? And they were heavy into it with their production management system. Same thing, you know, and Saturn was that company, that GM offshoot, I would dare say, that was really empowering and embracing those things. And I think even after the product line moved and closed, they moved that philosophy, moved into more of the other GM products and actually across the industry.
Yeah, and I think one of the differences probably, and I'm going to point out, you know, that all of the UAW people I was working with had at least 35 years of seniority.
Right.
See? And I'm not saying that was the problem. I'm just stating the fact that they had been subjected to 35 years of the old GM management style.
That's right.
You know, and even when we got a new plant manager coming in who had his NUMMI education, people still looking at him a little, you know, kind of tilt of the head of like, who are you? And, not sure if after that long somebody could adjust, where Saturn didn't have as much of a history.
Right. You know, and if you remember, you know, even GM had, you know, the GMI and Kettering Institute, right? You know, that's where they were cranking their own engineers out, right? And you know, next thing you know, they spend those years, it was 4 years, and then you did the co-ops and all that good stuff. You were embedded in the factory, right? And so it was just a thing. Actually, I had some really good friends that graduated from GMI Kettering. I think that was the new name of it, right?
It is. Yeah, it's the name. Now, my dad was a graduate of GMI, a co-op student, 40 years.
Small world, brother. Small world, man.
40 years at GM, but no football team.
No football team. No. They didn't play in the Big Ten, right? That wasn't happening.
And this is trivia at this point. I was on the field playing drums in the marching band.
There you go. That was athletics.
Marching band hat, not a helmet.
That's right. That was athletics. That's still athletics, man. Just sweating, trying to get it together. You had it together, brother.
So you had that early exposure in the auto industry. I mean, where after school or after that, you know, some people like stick with the auto industry. You've moved into different things. Like what kind of drove some of the choices about where you wanted to?
When I graduated, I didn't have that many offers. And so I just said, hey, I was going to go to grad school and at UT, University of Tennessee. And as I was getting ready to go, and then I was going to concentrate in engineering economy, right? Because I was also really good in business. And when I was about to start grad school, I joined this company called Raytheon and got into the aerospace side. And I thought it was pretty cool based on what was happening in that different industry, right? Because I knew it was, as classical industrial engineers, like, hey, you got a factory I can work in, right? All right, you building something, I can work there, right? I wasn't on the design side with the double E's and the ME guys just yet. And they grabbed me right out of school, right from grad school, because I was sick of being a broke college student, and was in the midst of doing immediate classical industrial engineering work that early in my career that you wouldn't know from, you know, it was a lot of acquisitions and mergers that was happening in the industry at the time between, you know, they had that Last Supper thing where it was like 20 aerospace and defense companies, and then it went down to like six, right? So a lot of mergers, a lot of things happening. So I was classical engineering, going, traveling to supplier sites, building their lines out, going and building brand new factories, whole new, facilities, moving, transitioning work over, moving one production line to another production line. And then once we got that up and going, we had to crank out the systems that were still in, that was keeping them in production, keeping these production lines hot, learning the back end. And so, doing value stream projects, all kinds of continuous improvement projects around it, lean-based projects to go increase efficiency because, hey, this merger happened, these acquisitions happened. You got to go back, pay the street, and what that means, you got to go deliver this product, right? You got to make sure you're on contract, get your on-time deliveries up, things like that. And so that was the starting point of being an industrial engineer. And then I dare say, spending those first 4 or 5 years, in my career doing that, it gave me the ability to learn a bunch of things. Number one, from a lean perspective, that you got to keep always understanding, you got to understand your whip to ship, right? That's a moniker there, right? Understanding the outflows and the back end of the business. That's where money's made. And so you got to maintain productivity, right? And increase productivity and decrease your non-value-added activities. Right. And that shows up in the dollar signs. That shows up on the balance sheet. And you didn't know that as you was learning it. You go get MBAs and things like that. That stuff sticks with you. So you're already getting the build of that business acumen that they didn't teach us engineers. Teach us engineers for sure because you didn't think about it. But as you got into business, that's what you got it. And those things helped morph my career as I came up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, kids today, if there's young professionals, I should say, listening to the podcast now, they would laugh at me because I literally carried like a digital stopwatch.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally.
And a clipboard.
That's right. And a clipboard. Right.
So nowadays.
And I was counting movements, counting arm movements, timing feet movements, walking, looking at spaghetti charts, walking it. Literally.
Yeah. I would get scolded and, I'm just sorry. I'm having a flashback to like,
no, it's all good.
The union shop chair. That's not, can't be timing the workers now. I'm like, no, I'm timing equipment. I'm looking at the equipment and the fact, and that was true, but they were really sensitive.
Oh yeah. That was a big deal. But I think that's where you had to have that communication. Like, hey, we are going to do a proposal, right? And we need to know what the hours per this unit is, right? How long it takes to build this unit, and where are the opportunities where we can go reduce that, right? To go and make this product more affordable, right? And that's a function of knowing what's the standard to measure you on. And then figuring out that what's that standard, and then what things can we do differently to change the standard, right? To reduce, and if we reduce the standard, the standard is standard, right? So we're not gonna, and you're gonna be more productive, and so that's where you really had to learn that those influencing things. You gotta learn to tell the story. I think we all had some war wounds dealing with our folks on the floor who are busting their tail, really adding value to the product. You're basically non-value added yourself, but you're trying to help them understand that, hey, we build more of these, which they want, right? You'll get more and it'll come down to you. And it'll affect all of us, right? Because we all got 401ks and stock prices we embedded in, and that all matters, right? And so that's where you gotta really meet people where they are and doing it. But we had a pretty good relationship with our folks. I mean, I got my little yellow card, but my first boss told my first department manager told us that you ain't did no job if you didn't get a citation. So you didn't do your job. So I was like, okay, got it. So let me go ahead and get one out the way. Right.
Yeah. And I think there's a leadership challenge, of helping everyone realize and meaning it that we're all in this together.
Absolutely. Like
the second plant manager I worked under was trying to shift away from that old adversarial management wins, that means the workers lose.
You know,
thinking about the future of the factory and winning together.
That's right.
I mean, as you've gone through different leadership roles in your career, what are some of your thoughts about helping everyone feel like one team?
Well, I think it's setting the table and where we are, right? And getting people's opinions and understanding, hey, here's where we are, right? So we're in the business of, we're in the business of providing the service and the products to protect for our warfighter to protect us. And we got to get it in the hands of them as soon as possible, him and her, right? And they understand that and they're honorable about that and they get that. I said, but we also have a fiduciary responsibility because we are a business, we are also there to drive and ensure that we are doing the best we can to ensure that and keep our profit margin up and deliver to our stakeholders, which we are part of those stakeholders, right? Now, what does that mean? That means if we are more affordable, we have more affordable products, we're more efficient with our products, we have high quality products. And we decrease all the non-value activities, decrease our quality, escapes issues, things like that. We will win more business. More business means, hey, 401k looks nice. Hey, that means the bonus structure looks better, right? That means the percentage of business to help us that has the reason that it provides the lifestyles that we like to live, provides for our families, things like that. That helps us. And so for us to do that, let's put it on the table, right? And let's talk through that. And it's all about transparency. And so in my career, particularly when I got into affordability and I was working on proposals and really predicting a system and really use a parametric and estimating, really understanding what a system should be at when we start even in design, early design, as we go on and propose this thing, it was always important for me to understand, okay, we are basing this off of something we've done in the past. Is there a way we can do something more efficient than what we've done in the past and add that to the proposal, right? And challenge ourselves to go do that. And using our continuous improvement mantras, lean, Six Sigma, all those type of things to go help us do that. And so that's where my mindset, it's gotten to my mindset of, hey, we can do this and we can do this more efficiently. And it's just something that's standard in your brain, right? And because usually when I'm getting into situations, it's not necessarily I'm in a situation like, hey, I'm either setting us up doing a turnaround situation, or I'm in a situation where I need to go drive growth, right? And so in either way, I need to go increase efficiency and increase productivity either way. Right. And so in either one of those, and even if we're in steady state, you still got to go, okay, I'm in steady state, but still I got to go increase efficiency, increase productivity and decrease non-value added. So it's just a part of what you're doing. Right. And whatever you do and whatever you think about as you and how to be innovative and creative to go make that happen.
What would you say were some of the key moments or some of the key lessons about rising through the ranks from engineer to GM, with P&L responsibility, thinking being, the business owner?
I think it's a little bit of that, what we just talked about, right? I think the key things is being open, right? Being passionate about what you do, you want to be the best in the world at it, right? Or try to be, right? Everybody wants to do that. Everybody wants to be that, but that means you got to put in work to do that, right? It also means aligning. For me, it was about, I just wanted to understand being experienced parts of the business where I can just pull what I did before and incorporate that into this different role. Right. And I wanted those experiences and I had to go find them. And at first I had to go express them to myself that I want to go do this. And I had to go work with my leaders and management team and HR, whoever, to say, hey, how can I go do that? What does that look like? Right. How can I get myself there? Once you reach up to your, you know, your 10, 15 years in your career set, that's when you're like, okay, what experiences do I want to go get after I got to, you know, engineer levels 5 and 6, right? Right. What things I want to do? I want to go run a business, right? Do I want to do this, or do I want to be a tech fellow, right? I want to do some research, right? You got to make that choice path. And for me, I wanted to go do, I did some design work. I said, well, I wasn't that good at it, but I got it done. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Did that design stuff. And I was like, I'm really good on this business thing, right? I get that stuff. I've been doing it forever. Right. Yep. So that's what fit with me. And that's matching my skills and my interests and my passions towards that. And just being in a place and being open to giving yourself grace to, you know, knowing that you're in a new experience, but you can bring what you learn there. Right. I dare say that those were some of the tenets I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you're mentoring people today or helping develop others, I'm sure there's opportunities to lend support when someone's a little bit afraid of, like, hey, this is a new function or a step up. Can I do it?
When you're mentoring now for me and coaching and all that for me now with my folks is, okay, let's talk about what have you done, right? Let's go, what are you really good at? Can you articulate that, right? And then what did people say that was responsible for you and your job or in places in your journey? What did they say that you were good at? Does that align? And then what do you want to go do next? Right. And I always end with next, because, you know, there is that continues a continuous thing. Like, hey, I want to do something different. Right. I want to do it this, and I might do something different this way. What do you want to do next? And being able to articulate that. And then if I have any type of pull, influence, or sway, it's more of going, helping that person get ready for that, being that ready now position to go jump there. And if I'm in a sponsor or a champion type mode, I can go and make that happen, right? Bring you on my team and do that role, and make sure they're set up for success when you get it, so they can get the grace to make the mistakes, right? That's the thing I think we don't talk enough about. As leaders, as people are progressing, is that everybody is not perfect, and we know that. We just don't talk through it, and failing is a part of the process in some points, right? You don't want to fail too big, but you want to do it fast, right?
Right? Fail fast and recover.
You want to learn from it. Say, okay, we did it this way. Particularly when you're trying to do something innovative and creative, man, you got to experiment a little bit, know what you're doing. But you got to get this person that sandbox to go do that and figure that out and say, well, this sandcastle needs a little bit more water, this little less water to make it get sturdy enough. And then I can build up to 4 levels instead of 3, right? Or 5. And then I can, you know, get the whole thing done. So that's what we got to do as leaders to make sure we do that for our folks.
Yeah. So I want to come back in a little bit and talk more about leading lean as a general manager, but kind of stepping back, even if it's, you know, earlier steps or even more recent, like what's a favorite story or example that you use of a great lean success story?
Yeah. I think one of the better ones is, when I was general manager, is like, we had a opportunity where we had to do a couple things. One, we had to do a retrofit for some parts for an engine provider, right? And this was a live retrofit that was happening for aircraft that was in the fleet. And then we also had to do, and that retrofit was an upgrade, right? And so think about that. So you bring in these parts, the old parts. You know, you got to supply these parts out in the fleet so they can go do the upgrade or retrofit in the field, right? And then you also, for those that are necessarily on the ground, they're going to send you a set of these new parts, of these old parts that you got to retrofit in your factory. And so what we had to do was just a big, huge value stream. It was a classical lean value stream problem, right? It is spaghetti flow chart, what can happen, what upgrades we need to do, but it also provided an opportunity for us to grow a line of business where we were in, not we can do retrofits and upgrades, not in a production environment and on a production line, but in an aftermarket line, right, where you're supporting the O&M part, the operations and maintenance piece of it, right? And you're dealing on that level, so you got a different set of skill resources. You got a different set of things that go make it happen. So, for example, as you know, in the union factory, right, you got folks that can only do work on the production line, right, and they do one thing or two things, and that's it. That's all they do. But if you get somebody in the aftermarket space, you basically got a jack of all trades, right? You got somebody who can do job A, B, C, D, E, and then you find somebody else to do C, D, E, F, and then they those tasks there. And think about that, right? So that's less people with more capability. And because it's in a retrofit environment, I get to add those efficiencies there, bringing in the factory, but also in a retrofit environment and an upgrade environment in the aftermarket. Now I get to charge a different profit margin on that too, right? And so we were able to grow significantly a part of the business at a couple of leaders we had go design the new line, design the new with the test capability and building that together. And then we were able to manage the inflow. Well, this is just classic lean, right? If I can manage the inflow, what's coming in house, when, how much, how many of these things can come from the fleet, then I can definitely manage the outflow, right? And if I get that in some working order, I basically am controlling the output. And if I get that in somewhere, I'll know when and how I can turn that crank as output. And that was and you're using all the tools in the lean tool set, right? Spaghetti flow charts, value stream management, you're using in all kinds of critical chain opportunities there, soothing the bottlenecks, removing those bottlenecks, working through that. And so it was really cool to watch the whole team that really set up, the team we had set up around it. Folks on the factory floor, everybody that was responsible for helping us get that thing off the ground, and we grew that business. And that was one of my shining stars as a lean guy, so I really appreciate that. And actually, I got credit, and then at the same time, I was getting my executive MBA at University of Tennessee. And at University of Tennessee Aerospace and Defense Program, and we had we had these projects that we had to do. We call them OAPs, Organizational Action Projects, that we had to sign up for in the executive program, which you bring real value to. And so that became my project, my OAP, and mm-hmm. I actually got rewarded first place and with the class for cool. That stuff and do. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So you go from setting up and improving production to being a leader who's overseeing all of that. I mean, imagine like when you've got people on the team who are doing a job you used to do.
Yep.
I'm sorry, you can't, I don't know if playing favorites is the right word, but having a different level of interest or attention to.
Yeah, you gotta give them their space, right? You know, it's like, what was that? I this might be a bad example. It's like when you get those player coaches, right? You know, that's a coach, right? But then you can actually play too, right? Or you know, you get that deal going down, and you're like, oh, I can't, you know, I gotta let you get, you know, but you gotta give them their space to figure out their thing. And so, what I did as a leader. I didn't step into those sandboxes, right? Unless they asked me to, or when I had questions during our reviews, like, did you consider this, right? Did you think about going it this way? So how would you do it if you did it this way, right? And that gave me time to focus on the stuff that I needed to spend the energy on, right? Risk reduction, working with the customer relationship, flowing it up to our leaders, making sure everything is all right, you know, dealing those type of status and things, keeping the team fed, because we were working, sometimes we're working weekends, you know, working second shifts, things like that, making sure I'm feeding them, making sure I'm taking care of them and the morale and managing that, and also keeping the lights on for the other parts of the business that we had to run, right? So for me, it's all about, you know, I have no choice but to trust who's on my team, right? You know, that's what I think people don't realize. Sometimes you have no choice. You're like, you necessarily, particularly when you're in these hyper matrix organizations where, you know, you got folks that report to you, but they dotted line to you, right? And then you got folks that report to you, or they're two or three levels lower than you, right? And you got to let your leaders lead. And so you don't jump in the stuff, you know, that's just bad leadership when you got to go jump in and go, you know, get into a space where you think you know without being requested to go jump in and help with that, right? You know, I was like that, you know, in being an affordability person, right, with some of our hardware, our engineering hardware, engineering designs that we had, I would ask the question, okay, so what's the design of cost goal here? I was going to get the cost down on this thing. What are we using to estimate how we're doing this for? Or when I'm asking the supply chain folks, like, okay, are we challenging this supplier to lower the cost here? Let's go to their line. Let's go see what they're doing. Let's go do a visit. Let's go challenge them and see what they're doing to get us more efficient, right? It is those type of things where those friends I have where you're empowering the folks to do the work, but you're just asking those key questions along the way. And if you know if they're used to you doing that, they know to say, hey, okay, you know, Dwayne's a pro at this. You know, Mark is a pro at this one. You know, he did this. So, you know, he's basically looking at us like, okay, you know, he can do it better. So we got to show him how we can do it better than he can, right? And you know, he's going to ask those questions. So we better be, you know, 3-4 questions deep, understand what's going down here. So.
Yeah. So in, you know, general manager role, I mean, what generally speaking, would you say was the split of your time and attention? I'm going to make up categories like, you know, lean and supply chain, mm-hmm. talent, finance, culture, customers, and external facing work. There's a lot of demands.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I think I like to call it, you know, you got your day-to-day projects that's due, right? You got your metrics that you need to meet, right? And your cadence around when those metrics are real time, right? and your cadence around leading and lagging, and then you got all the swirl of the cadences of what happened when happened now, right? And for me, it's a function of I would spend a day, the first part of the day and the second part of the day walking the floor, just checking on the team, see how everybody's doing, what happened over the weekend, blah, 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 just to let people know we're human, right? And then the other part was as we go spend part of the day, first part of the morning, because you got to have that cadence of, okay, what's on the docket? What happened, what we're doing, where we need to spend that energy. Your customer sessions, I dare say, was probably 15 to 20% of it, just out doing the customer intimacy work, telling how things are going, giving those updates. And the rest was spending time, you know, strategizing and visualizing and playing. I like to call it 3D chess, of all, using all that cadence of what happens when, right? So can I get in front of this and play the chess and say, how many moves can I make before we get that? Like, how do I know that we're going to make rate this month? And it's the 5th, right? And this is February and not a leap year, right? I don't have the extra day, but I'm still responsible for making plans. So what are we doing there? What's happening these days? And so you start finding patterns. And I study the patterns and I try to, you know, work that. So a lot of my time, 50% of not 50%, probably about 35% of my time, I want to spend the day doing that stuff because that helps my team. Unless it's a big project going on, you know how stuff, fires happen all the time.
Yeah.
But that's how I like to spend my day. And the team, the morale thing is, I think it's something that it's just embedded in who I am. Right. Mm-hmm. So the office door is open if I'm not too busy, unless I'm strategizing a meeting. What happened? Come on through. What's happening? And I'm usually got some, you know, tag up with the team, tag up with some of the leaders, you know, part of the week. So it's just embedded in what you do, right? It's hard for me to put a percentage on it, but it's all embedded in what you do.
Yeah. So, you know, in that role as a P&L leader, when you're thinking about lean and, mm-hmm. and culture and, you know, what things, you know, can or must that P&L leader do that are unique to that role, as opposed to people that are in roles like, you know, engineer,
yeah.
continuous improvement specialist, yeah. or yeah.
yeah.
How do you?
So because you're a P&L leader, you got a little weight, right, with that. and you can set the stage, set the standard, and hold ourselves accountable to that standard of what we're setting, right? So for me, it's like we're going to go use, you know, name the lean philosophy. You might have an internal one. We're going to use this, and we have a goal to increase profit by X, and we're going to use our lean philosophy to go make it work. We're going to be more efficient and bring cost savings to the business every year by X. We're going to use lean to go do that. So, and that's everybody's standard and goal. So, well, I'm letting you be creative, but and so you can find out where it is, and then you got to set the structure around how do you cadence that, how do you update that, how do you status that, how do you hold everybody accountable to that, make sure that's in their goals, right? And you ask questions along the way and say, so is this a lean project that's going to have to do that? Do I need to sponsor something around that? Or are we doing a gimbal walk? What's happening, right? What are the things that we're doing to ensure that we're going to be more efficient and we're going to increase the productivity in this moment? And because that's productivity, that helps my profit, my margin, that helps everything else. So that's and then articulating that, the why, right? Some leaders at some level where you should know how to do the how. At the lower level, no. But you better be able to articulate the how. Mm-hmm. But you always got to say, as particularly, you always got to start with the why.
Yeah. Yeah.
The why, right? You know, Simon Sinek as well. And that should be a part of your why. And so you can get the ownership and the accountability across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a risk of a leader mistakenly assuming the why is understood.
Right. It's never understood unless you say it. You got to keep saying it. And and my favorite thing is I would say something. I said, does that make sense? Am I saying? And I give them the right. I said, now you got the right to say Dwayne's crazy today. Yeah, it's okay. My wife calls me crazy all the time. It's all good. I'm used to it. Right.
That's different.
Am I being crazy today? Am I being crazy today? And say, no. That's I get it. You know, you get it. No. Or help me shape what this means. Here's what the vision is. Help me shape this, right? How can we get that? Help me. You use that beautiful brain God gave you and help me out here because I'm short. I'm short right here. Yeah. You know, and I think that for me, as that's just me being a human being, I humble myself and say, I don't know this. Well, help me figure this out. Right. But I know we got this goal. I know that we need this, right? We got to get this. We got to play our part here. So what is our part? Help me understand. Right.
Yeah. So what other than maybe answering a question like that candidly, mm-hmm. when you're asking people to challenge you, like what general advice would you have for engineers or improvement professionals? What can they do to better communicate with their P&L leaders or engage them when it comes to lean and improvement?
Yeah, I think what you have to understand is, particularly if you are a continuous improvement professional or you are in engineering and you got some productivity goal that you understand that came down to you, you need to be able to articulate in the language of what that leader is going to need you to articulate. And there's dollars and cents, percentages and whatever, right? And so if you need help, you need to ask for help. It's like, how does this show up, finance person? How does this show up in the numbers, right? Tell me, how does that show up, right? Because that's what they're there for, right? Because a lot of times, particularly on the engineering side, you know, no one tells us the business impact of what we're doing, right? Because they tell us to go deal with this widget and you got this much schedule and budget to go do it, right? No one tells us, like, what's the impact of that, right? We used to spend time with our team doing the quarterly reviews, and we'll get a meeting together after the quarter review. And we'll say, hey, so, you know, do you understand how we affected these numbers this quarter? Do you understand why and what you did, what you did impacts that, right? And that helps them, you know, bring it home to at the level they can understand and take all the financial language out of it and put it in their language and put it in their vernacular on how they can go and understand what that impact is. And I think that's what all our those professors got to have. You got to have a business acumen, right? You got to have it, right? You got to have it. It helps you predict get be more aware if and when a situation is happening with the company that you need to be at, right? It helps you look at and say, okay, we got X amount of resources. This is how much sales we bring across. I come in as a cost center. I'm not generating necessarily profit here in my role. So it behooves me to ensure that on that middle part of the balance sheet, when it talks about cost, I need to make sure that I'm bringing efficiency and productivity and bringing that to bear, right? And what I'm doing, that adds value to the business, that adds value to my P&L leader, and that shows my impact, my impact to the on the business, right? I need to realize that. Same thing with an engineer, right? You need to realize that a customer is only going to pay so much for this. There's only a market. A market's going to only pay so much for this thing they're requesting they need. So I need to be able to ensure that my design is modular, or you know, it can hit. It's in the right target space of where it can be sold at, right? And it's in a right space where we can actually go build it, right? And instead of it sits on a nice little PowerPoint or in a CAD program, right? It's something that we can go actually build and actually be sold, right? And that's you understanding what that market looks like, right? And understand your options of, if I give you this requirement, you know, this is what the thing's going to cost. But if you're asking for something that's just technically compliant, I don't need to go give you the Rolls Royce. You know, you might be cool with a Honda Accord, right? Mm-hmm. And so I need to be thinking that way. And provide an option where you can upgrade the Honda Accord, right, to get what you want, if you want it to be swanky, right?
Yeah. So, Duane, you had mentioned earlier, you know, we were working as an engineer, there were mergers and acquisitions.
Yep.
In aerospace, mergers and acquisitions continue over time. You've been able to apply lean in some of that work. Can you make this M&A work a process?
Yeah. Absolutely. I had a great learning, and I'm gonna plug UT again, and not just because, but it was a great learning experience when we talked about like lean as a. We have one of the professors, Peterson. He teaches this thing called lean as a business process, right? And it really helps you outline and look at the processes that you're doing to set forth, right? So if you think about an M&A, right, you're doing due diligence, you're doing, you know, you're doing pre and post integration, then you're doing close, right? And you're doing there, and then there's steps in all those things. That's the rule book. Harvard will tell you, Yale will tell you, everybody will tell you what that is, right? But there are efficiencies that you can go grab out of that during this project time to really help understand, help you move the needle forward, because there is an end and you want to go maximize the story of why it's supposed to come together. And you want to go maximize the reason why, in terms of synergies and in terms of reorganization and in terms of culture. Right. And so when you're doing those things, there are processes embedded in there where you can actually look at the value stream and lean out some stuff, add some innovatives to that, crank down that time, and really focus on those big things you want to go crank out projects. So if you're doing, you're combining organizations' functions, right? You got, you know, BD development from company X and BD development from company Y, right? What are the things, what's the process of how you go lean out all the process, the basic process that you're supposed to do, sales, capture, proposals, you know, output, right? Those things, and customer influence and customer engagement, customer relationship management, right? If you look at those things, like, what do you do? What do you do? Let's go align on those processes and using the lean philosophy to go help us get there. So there are opportunities there. People just don't think about it because it's hard. There's a lot, there's a lot of days, nights, but you can actually use that. You can actually use that philosophy to help you. Along with the teams that's going to be putting it together, because you're usually, when you're doing an M&A, you're on a team of superstars, right? There's a bunch of superstars, and then you got your, you know, outside consultants and things like that that's there to help do all the legs and feet. But you're with the superstar brains that's going to be doing this hard work because it's so important, because these things came together. So, you know, why not bring that innovation and creativity to using that, using Lean to go do that?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Framing that as creativity as innovation. That's a great application. Thanks. And then one other thing, you know, we have time for here, Dwayne, and I know one thing that's really important to you as well is some of the work that you do in the nonprofit space, the National Society of Black Engineers.
Sure. Sure.
Processes and opportunities for lean and creativity and productivity there.
Oh my God. It's, I dare say you can do it in whatever thing you're doing from a nonprofit extracurricular perspective, right? If you're managing a soccer team, if you're leading those, and the thing I did when I was chair of NASA Black Engineers, and I was able to be chair of the Alumni Extension leg of that organization, was I said, guys, we don't need all day, all night to do meetings on the weekends, and we already tired, we came from work, right? Let's focus ourselves and use these work at philosophies that we do to get things done, right? If we can't solve these problems or these opportunities, what we got to do to serve our members between 8 and 5 on Saturday, and maybe do some functional work between your teams with your teams on Friday, we don't need to be doing this. We don't need to be going all night. There's no need for that, right? And I said, we know how to do meetings. And so as lean business process, you know, functional meetings, right? You know, all that stuff. We had Robert's Rules of Orders. That was already a mantra used, but got to know how to implement that, how to use those things. And you create a cadence, right? This is how I want you to report out, right? everybody doesn't make the same, you know, I don't need any special presentations. No, I need here's your template. This is how we're going to be more efficient, right? Here's your fourth panel. That's it. And it was like, and my team, the team was like, man, you know, and I had like the paid headquarters staff coming out of meetings. I had the executive directors and all this stuff. I mean, it's like, man, these meetings are efficient. I'm like, yeah, it gets real easy when you just get down to the brass tacks, right? Everybody, you know, there's a reason you do it. And we had one of the most successful 3-year runs of that organization, but it also helped us with succession planning because people start saying, hey, this job is, definitely a labor of love because you have volunteer basis on anything, right? But it also lets people know that they can do it. It's not as hard as it can be because you got the structure that people can go accomplish what you got to go accomplish, right?
Yeah. So there's an opportunity for that same management discipline that you would
absolutely
have in the business.
Bring that to where? Bring that to church meetings. Bring that. I am like that in everything I'm doing, nonprofit extracurricular. I do. I am the same way. What we're doing, which way we're going. There's a way we can do this quicker. What's happening? Let's make a decision. Let's go. Where's the structure? Let's move it. Right. And let's follow a cadence. Let's get it done. And then you imagine how much time you save doing that. Right.
Yeah. Well, and, we're short on time, but I want to ask you this last question anyway, realizing the time pressure. You know, in your bio, and it talks about the importance of DEI. It seems like you've shifted from being an engineer to a lean champion.
Yeah.
In your role as a GM, what does it mean to be a DEI champion?
Oh, that's great. It means that you are representing the company, and you believe in the values, and particularly the values and the structure of the values and the mission of the company. And you are, and those goals like that around taking care of people, being inclusive, understanding that we can be a better representation of the places where we work and what we work, and you can do that. And then from my standpoint, because I think everybody is an engineer, you know, us engineers, we love engineers, right? And, you know, and I truly believe that being in the STEM field is a wonderful, wonderful springboard to whatever you want to do in life, particularly for African Americans. And that way, I've used that to that passion that I have and the company that I work for. I've always aligned with those passions. And when I was doing the Nesby stuff, I was a part of the company, and the company fully supported me. That same company was a long time top-tier sponsor of the organizations that I've been part of. And I was able to connect the dots with the ROI for the company, but also increase the ROI for the mission of Nesby, right? And that's where you bring in game at. And that's where the championship came out of, and understanding and saying, hey, ain't nothing new under the sun. Let's go do it. And we can open up, and you're opening up doors, you open up eyes to, hey, engineering leader, vice president, look at all this talent. Let me take you to a conference where there's 10,000 black engineers, and you go and like, oh, and they look in your eyes, you're like, oh my God, I didn't think this existed. I was like, yeah, you did. And it's just, you didn't know, right? You don't know what you don't know. Like, come on, get this experience, right? And you go get this experience, like, man, look at this. This is what it's about. We need to be doing this. Look at all this talent around us. And, you know, and this is, what are we doing, right? And then at the same time, I'm impacting the Dwayne Allens of the world, the young Dwaynes from Memphis, Tennessee, who trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with this engineering degree, right? Where are those opportunities? And somebody that looks like me is the physical embodiment that I can do it. That's why I knew I could do it, right? And people don't realize that those visuals really matter, because you see the visual embodiment of your goal, of your dream, and you see it, right? And you see it, and you can touch it, and you can talk to it, right? And it talks back to you, right? and it's more than just this inanimate thing. It's a real thing. And so that's why I incorporate and proud to do some of this work and effort. And it's a impactful thing of mine. It's that thing that I'm gonna make sure that I lead the earth with, that I had an impact on, man. And so that's important for me. So really thank you for that question. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for your answers and your story here today. Dwayne Allen has been our guest. I'll put a link to his website in the show notes. He's an executive, a speaker, workshop facilitator. Dwayne, really great opportunity to talk with you here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. So really appreciate it. Thanks for all you do, brother. And keep going for them industrial engineers.
Yeah. The IE each year. And
keep us imagine engineers going, as they used to call it, right?
Thanks for making time and in your busy day here.
Really all right. Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Well, thanks again to Dwayne Allen for a great discussion today. To learn more about him, look for links in the show notes or go online, leanblog.org/502. Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, please share it with a colleague. I would love it if you rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.